This is really one of the most wonderful meetings that I go to every year, and I go to a lot of meetings. It's the right size, it has the right people, and the interaction is really great. What I'm going to do today is to take you on a whirlwind tour through the ways in which you can, the molecular analyses that you can use to understand pluripotency. So I'm going to be talking about quite a bit of work. The first part will be our published work, and then I'll follow up with some unpublished work at the end. Okay, so as you all know, there are two types of stem cells. All stem cells self-renew and give rise to specialized cells, but there are multipotent cells, which include all the somatic adult fetal stem cells. They have limited differentiation capacity, and they become senescent. Two qualities that pluripotent stem cells do not have, embryonic stem cells and induced pluripotent stem cells have unlimited differentiation capacity, and they're immortal. So even though they're both called stem cells, they're very different from each other. So the question we wanted to address using a systems biology approach was really to ask, why are some stem cells pluripotent and self-renew, while others are multipotent and senesce? So systems biology is an approach in which you don't focus on a single tool. So as an illustration here, obviously, if you use a hammer, the only thing you can work on are nails, screwdriver, etc. So similarly, in molecular biology, if you use techniques like microarrays and RT-PCR, you'll discover messenger RNA and microRNA profiles. If you do SNP genotyping and whole genome sequencing, you'll discover things like copy number variation and loss of heterozygosity. And if you use methods like bisulfite conversion, as Ryan mentioned earlier, or microarrays or some of these other methylation protocols, then you'll be able to understand more about DNA methylation, epigenetics, and imprinting. So our philosophy is that we want to know about all of these things, and we want to know about all these things in a lot of cells. So we call this subcellular systems biology, the systems biology of stem cells. And I'm going to be talking about, very briefly, about all four of these interacting factors in a pluripotent environment. So one of the reasons why this is important is because we really need molecular diagnostics of pluripotency right now. The gold standard is an animal-based teratoma assay, and there are so many new cell lines being made that we need to be able to screen them by some other method. So we're working on developing a molecular diagnostic test for pluripotence, which can replace and either be more predictive than the animal-based teratoma assay. This sort of approach also allows you to examine the safety of cell replacement therapy by identifying biomarkers. These are molecular biomarkers. So we can tell when the cells have lost pluripotence, look for tumors that derive from pluripotent cells, and we hope down the line with this information we'll be able to control differentiation. We'll come up with new ways to reprogram cells. And maybe we can come up with ideas about how you can change one cell type into another directly without going through the pluripotent stage. So our strategy is to develop there are three key elements. One is content. We need a large number of human pluripotent stem cell lines. I don't care what's happening in H9 if it's not happening in H1, it's not happening in the Harvard lines. I want to know what's going on in every pluripotent stem cell line that we can get our hands on. But it doesn't help you to look at only pluripotent stem cells because you need something to compare them with. So context is a second very important item. We need cells that are not pluripotent so that we can tell what the differences are. And then the third is essentially the methods. We need consistent methods in which we can use high throughput analysis. Okay, so the content and context are both solved by a concept that we call the stem cell matrix. This is stem cell matrix version 1. We had 153 cell lines, and you'll see all the way through my presentation, it'll always be a matrix. We'll always do the same analysis on a group of different cell types. So in this case, we chose a number of pluripotent cell types. We only look at human cells. A number of multipotent stem cell types, and some differentiating and differentiated cell types. And that's generally what we do for every analysis. This is one of the first results of this kind of analysis. It was a paper published last year, led by my postdoc, Franz Josef Mueller, and my postdoc, Louise Arendt. And what we did was, instead of trying to grow up all these cells, we identified a network of people that we trusted all over the world, who we knew did good work, and we asked them to provide us with cells. So we did that. We got a lot of pluripotent stem cells from all over the world. And then we did gene expression analysis. And then key to this were the analysis tools that we used. So we have a two-part strategy. Our first part of our strategy is to rapidly look at the global expression of different things, or the global profile. Messenger RNA, microRNA, looking at the epigenome using DNA methylation, and looking at the genome using SNP genotyping. Illumina, which is a local company, has a microarray approach to all of these. It's relatively cheap, and so we can grab a profile very quickly. And then once we have looked at a large number of cells, we can select typical samples based on those data. And then we can invest in sequencing, such as the sequencing that Ryan talked about, because it's very expensive and you need a lot of cells. So this is our first result, which I think is really, this is our first publication on this. One of the important aspects, once you get a whole large data set like this, is to not impose your own bias on what the cells are. So essentially you have to wipe out whatever people said the cells are. And then we let a machine learning algorithm tell us how many different cell types there are. How many different things are there in this huge data set? And I'm just going to show you really quickly how this method called NMF works. Essentially, what you do is you ask the computer to separate everything into 2, 3, 5, 6, etc., different categories. And it starts at different places. So with different runs, you'll get very, very different things. But eventually, you'll notice you start getting around 11, 14, you start seeing the same thing no matter where you started. Okay, so this means that the computer has an unbiased way told us how many things there are in this group, separable things. And that's illustrated by this Kofinic coefficient. Okay, so simple method, takes a lot of computer time, but it does give us unbiased results. Now this is the kind of map you get often used from an NMF analysis, and this is our stem cell matrix version 1. And really, the take-home message here is that all the embryonic stem cells, all the pluripotent cells, all group together in this one group plus a tiny little satellite. The tiny little satellite are all the aneuploid lines that were in this group. They're very similar, but not quite the same. And so what we found was that in this group, we found that there are 7 different types of neural stem cells. Even though the people who gave them to us all said they're neural stem cells, they all have the capacity to make neurons and glia. And one pluripotent stem cell group. So this is the first clue that we had that pluripotence was something really, really different from everything else. And we discovered that to try to find the molecular basis of this, we took our gene expression profile data, superimposed it on a protein-protein interaction network. We did this because we wanted to find out what the really important factors were, which are obviously proteins. And we knew that everything interacts, and so we wanted to know what sort of network was involved in cells being pluripotent. We called this the PluriNet. It's a really interesting group of proteins. A lot of cell cycle, so those of you who are interested, it's not quite the cell cycle, but there's a lot of cell cycle involved. And if you sort of take a 50,000-foot look at the PluriNet here is, if it's expressed highly, it's in red. If it's expressed low, it's in green. And there are 3 examples of each cell type. These are embryonic stem cells. You see they're very red, high expression of the PluriNet. Induced pluripotent cells, 3 different human cell lines. And these are teratocarcinomas, which you've heard about before. They are very similar to ES cells, but they're chromosomally abnormal. And then this is a cell line which is not pluripotent. So you can tell right away that cells that are pluripotent are enriched in this PluriNet. Okay, so you just heard about microRNAs, so I don't have to go over this again. MicroRNAs control the expression of a lot of genes, and so they're really powerful middle managers. Last year, we published a microRNA profiling of embryonic stem cells, human embryonic stem cells, and found that they had a unique signature. By now, this should be kind of old, right? The matrix we used for this, it's 130 cell samples. We used 14 different human ES cell lines. And the usual players. And we used a microarray that was in development by Illumina, is now for sale. We've added some others, including, and we've also looked at DNA methylation looking at the complete transcriptome using RNA-seq. Okay, so the result is that we found this is a map of the entire genome. The green arrows represent microRNA clusters that are upregulated specifically in embryonic stem cells and not in the other cell types we looked at. We discovered, some of this had been reported again, we discovered several new clusters, including a very interesting one here on chromosome 14, which is imprinted, and it's not expressed at all in ES cells. Okay, and we also discovered that in the upregulated microRNAs, most of them share the same seed sequence, which is the important specificity sequence, which determines what RNA they work on. So it looks like there are a lot of microRNAs. They're working on a small number of messenger RNAs. Okay, since I got to go fast, DNA methylation overview matrix, 80 cell samples. We used a microarray to start with, and we discovered again, not surprising by now, I don't have to show you this anymore. Human embryonic stem cells, all these lines, which are sort of pink in this area. Are very similar to each other, and they're very different from everything else. We have followed up on that by being the second in the first group of people to sequence the entire methylome. Our paper should be coming out very shortly. We took a slightly different approach than Ryan's. We looked at human embryonic stem cells and wanted to do a developmental time course. So we looked at differentiated embryonic stem cells and then neonatal fibroblasts, which are a bit more mature, and then compared them to a fully differentiated cell type, which is peripheral blood monocytes. This is a collaboration with the Genome Institute of Singapore, the IBM Research Center, and the Beijing Research Genome Institute, because we're too small to do this on our own. This just illustrates, I'll just show you at the top, presumably you'll get to read all this fairly soon. This just shows in embryonic stem cells that this HOXA cluster has much less methylation. A lot of our results are similar to Ryan's, but we have some different ones as well because we use different cell types. Okay, last, genomic integrity. This is DNA now, another DNA. There are a lot of similarities between ES cells, iPS cells, and teratocarcinomas. That makes everybody very nervous. We don't want to put cells into people that are going to cause them to be sicker than they were before you treated them. So because these cells look so similar, and you've seen that, they're similar in another way, too. Embryonic stem cells develop the same chromosomal abnormalities that have been found in teratocarcinomas in people. And these are trisomies of chromosome 1, 12, and 17. And the picture you're seeing is a fish showing two copies of chromosome 17 and 1, 2, 3 copies of chromosome 12 in H9 cells. So we see this all the time. Okay, so we used SNP genotyping, single nucleotide polymorphisms. These were designed for the HapMap project to map human diversity. This is the basis for genome-wide association studies to identify complex traits that underlie disease. And some specific SNPs or groups of SNPs are absolutely informative for certain things, like drug sensitivities, warfarin, statins. I know personally that I am sensitive to statins because I've done my SNP genotype. If I take statins, I will probably get a wasting muscle disease, so I'm probably not going to do it. Then there's also risk factors, heart disease, Alzheimer's disease, all sorts of diseases that you can find with your SNP genotype. So again, we used a matrix, 37 cell samples, same sort of range. And this is just a little snippet of the data that we got. One of the things you can learn from SNP genotyping is ethnicity of the cells. So here we have a list of embryonic stem cell lines and where they were derived. And this is the ethnicity based on the SNP genotype. So you see a lot of them are what is called admixed. That means that we can't really nail them down to a particular country. Most of them are, however, are European, East Asian, and that's about it. And you'll notice that this column here is completely blank. There are no African embryonic stem cells. Okay. So I just wanted to point out here that these two cell lines, the H9 and H1, were both derived in Wisconsin, but one of them, you can see, this is European, this came from Wisconsin. The H9 line was derived from a blastocyst that came from Israel. And you can tell that it was because it has an Israeli typical SNP genotype. Okay, so we've now expanded the ethnicity analysis. So we have 47 embryonic stem cell lines, more iPS cell lines. We've made a lot of iPS cell lines, a lot of other cells. And this map, which essentially shows you where the cells came from ethnically and where they were derived. So just notice that there's a lot of arrows on the map. And I also wanted to point out that we've made an induced pluripotent stem cell line from a pure Yoruba African haplotype. So we are trying to introduce diversity into the pluripotent stem cell field. We also, the SNP genotype tells you that about subchromosomal genetic aberrations. You can see here, these are all embryonic stem cell lines. You can see there's a duplication of most of chromosome 1 here. Two of them have a duplication of chromosome 12, and two of them have duplication of most of chromosome 17. You can't get this information from karyotyping because these are very, very small regions. We found that there were some, much to our surprise, maybe not, that we found there were some genomic aberrations that were specific to the pluripotent embryonic stem cell lines. We found the usual aneuploidies. Some of them were a little smaller. Some of them were whole chromosomes. But we found some very striking subchromosomal duplications as well. And I'm going to show you one of them, chromosome 12. So this is a region that was recurrently duplicated in embryonic stem cells, no matter where they came from. And you can see, if you look on the whole chromosome, it's really, really small. But then we've expanded it here and expanded it more here. So these are all the different lines that have that duplication. And the really interesting thing is what is duplicated. In here, you see the NANOG gene, and you see a NANOG pseudogene. And these are consistently duplicated in embryonic stem cell lines. Okay, because we've done all the different kinds of analyses on these cells, we know that we can actually determine that the duplicated regions are expressed, so that there is something for them to be selected for. This is our stem cell matrix 2. Of course, our philosophy is to get lots and lots of cells, look at them in lots and lots of ways, and trying to come up with really the truths behind pluripotence. So just to summarize, I told you about our messenger RNA, in which we found a specific interacting network, which we called the plurinet. MicroRNA showed us a distinctive profile, a distinctive seed sequence. Our genome structure, SNP genotyping, shows us that there was a systematic selection for particular duplications in pluripotent cells. And our epigenetic analysis showed that the methylation is very highly regulated and very different from any other cell type. Okay, so I want to close by showing you my lab. The people on the top were all at the party to celebrate Obama's executive order. That's why they're all holding orange juice with a bit of champagne in it. This is sort of my core group: Tayo, Yvonne, Ha, Gosha, Candace, Louise. Louise Laurent is one of the senior scientists. She actually has a position at UCSD now. She was my postdoc, but we continue to work together. And Franz Josef Mueller now has a position in Germany, but he's coming back next year to do a sabbatical with me. Inbar Friedrich Ben-Nun, and then new people who I haven't had a chance to take pictures of, several postdocs. And then we've had this really amazing element that's just sort of descended upon us recently, and that's the student interns that are provided by the CIRM program. We have this influx of youth in our lab, which has really changed the personality of the place. And it's giving our postdocs an opportunity to mentor people at a very early stage. We have tons of collaborators, so I usually just select some random list. These are all people that we like to work with. Their life is too short. There's no point in working with difficult people. We have funding from a variety of sources, including the NIH, the Alzheimer's Association, and CIRM is a major funder of my lab now, and I'm very grateful for that. We also have several foundations that have given us bits of money, usually to support postdocs: the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the O'Keefe Foundation, the Meyer Foundation, the Pew Foundation, the Millipore Foundation, and the Merck Foundation. I thank them all very much. Thanks.